course. I hadn't forgotten that. Previously, we'd frozen the water, either with Selyse Leanne or Sarah's skills. I was banned from using Selyse Leanne after nearly killing myself with it, so that was out. Sarah probably could have frozen it, but we decided conserving her mana was a priority. I had a much simpler solution. I handed Jin the torch and brought out a small rod, similar to a dueling cane. I pressed the rune on the cane. The key shook, then flew toward the end of the rod. Magnetism was a form of metal magic, usually restricted to people with the Forge Master attunement in Kaelford. There were, however, a few others who could use it. Karras was one of them, but he couldn't help me enchant items without risking breaking them. Fortunately, I had found another option. Tavare, one of Derek's summoned monsters. It took some convincing to get Derek to summon them to help me with an enchantment, but it was worth the effort. With the key stuck to the end of the rod, I stepped back, avoiding the cage as it fell back to the ground. Easy, I remarked. Indeed, Jin agreed. The tip of the rod was sizzling. Oh, ack! Acid on the key! I deactivated the magnet function, letting the key drop to the floor. Fortunately, the rod didn't seem badly damaged. Okay, we'll need to move the key without touching it. I knelt down next to it.
Should have kept your gauntlet for that.
I shook my head. Don't need it. I've picked up a few new tricks. I pulled just a bit of transference mana into my hand, then released it, blasting the key forward.
Not bad. Can you get it into the keyhole that way?
I shook my head. No, but I can't get it close enough and pick it back up with the rod for just a second. The rod's tip was burned, but not badly enough that I was overly concerned. We were probably dispersing any remaining acid on the key just by moving it around, too. I pushed the key over to the door to what I was affectionately calling the Tyrant Room. I knew from past experience that it contained a long hall lined by magical vines and a majestic carpeted floor leading down the center toward a throne. On the throne was a crown. Picking up that crown would summon an illusion of the tyrant in gold. I rubbed my face, remembering where he'd punched me in the face. Thanks, Professor Orden. Your teaching methods are second to none. I shook my head, raising the key to the door using the rod, and opened it. We'd planned for this, too. The door opened, revealing exactly the room we'd expected. There was one problem. The tyrant was already there. 9 feet tall and armored in golden mail, he carried a gilded two-handed sword, which had been lying hidden in the vines last time we'd visited the room. I'd seen something else shimmering in the vines, too, which I'd presumed to be a hidden key. The plan had been to use the magnetic rod to pull the key out of the room and avoid the crown entirely. This was, of course, no longer possible. I backed away immediately.
Ah, the young swordsman has returned. Do you intend to fight me without the benefit of your winged friend this time?
I frowned. Professor Orden had been the one running the test last time, hadn't she? Who else knew about what I'd done last time? Was the tyrant here a summoned monster rather than an illusion? If that was the case, perhaps his knowledge would have persisted. But it was more likely there was just more than one teacher observing and running each test. This was probably an illusion, just like the others. I couldn't let his taunts intimidate me. I'm afraid I won't be challenging you today. Just here for the key, no need to scuff your armor. I glanced around the room while I talked, hoping a bit of chatter would buy me time. That glimmer I'd seen in the vines was gone. I saw why a moment later when the tyrant raised his left hand.
Regrettably, the key is already in my possession.
Is it? I pointed the magnetic rod at the key and turned it on. The key flew out of his hand. The tyrant stared blankly at us for a moment.
That was rude.
I nodded. Yeah, we're like that. I tossed the rod, key and all, to Jin. Try that on the box. He caught the rod and headed toward the back of the room where we'd found a container we'd never been able to open. The tyrant took his sword in both hands and stepped forward.
That belonged to me.
I drew my sword again, taking a traditional fencing stance. You seem to think a lot of things belong to you. I gestured with my sword at the crown he was now wearing above his mask.
At least you got the crown. Isn't that good enough?
The tyrant shook his head.
Of course not. Everything belongs to me. I'll show you why.
The tyrant charged. I slashed the air, sending a shockwave in his direction, but he cut the shockwave in half with a swing of his own. Then he was in swinging range, taking a huge sweep at my midsection. I backed off. Jin calmly said,
It doesn't fit.
As if I wasn't currently in the middle of battling against a 9-foot-tall illusory deity.
Okay, little help then?
The tyrant's next swing connected with my blade, battering it to the side with incredible force. Then he released one hand to throw a punch at my face. Not again. I ducked, lashing out with a punch of my own, charged with transference mana. It only blasted him back a few inches, but that was just enough to make his next swing miss. I took advantage of that, swiping my blade upward and connecting with his chin. The blade deflected harmlessly off his steel mask, just as I'd feared. Then he was swinging again with enough force to cut me in half. Move! I activated the ring of jumping, blasting myself out of the way. The tyrant's blade hit the stone where I'd just been standing, and I hit him with a shockwave of force from the side. He barely even seemed to notice. His armor was unmarked. Then Jin shot him in the back of the head. I heard the ring of metal as I suddenly remembered that Jin was there, and the tyrant fell forward a step. Jin's attunement was preventing both the tyrant and me from noticing him sneaking up, I realized. Nice! I couldn't be too congratulatory, though, because the tyrant backhanded Jin a moment later. The tyrant was still moving, and from what I could see when he spun around to swing his sword at Jin, he was probably unhurt. This is ridiculous. We can't beat him in a straight fight.
Keep him busy,
I shouted. I heard the sounds of gunfire pinging against metal in response. I rushed for where Jin had dropped the key next to the box. Should I keep trying to open the box and hope there's something useful inside? No, that could take ages for something that may be unrelated. I picked up the key and rushed to the other door, the one leading to the fire statues. I set the key in the lock. It fit. I didn't turn it.
Hey! Over here!
I blasted the tyrant from behind.
You fight without honor. I am quite disappointed.
He turned, ignoring Jin for the moment, to walk in my direction.
You know, my father says the same thing all the time.
I waited for the tyrant to get right in front of me, and thus in front of the door. So this is going to be cathartic. I turned the key, then immediately activated the ring of jumping to push myself out of the way. The door opened. The fire statues inside fired out a blast of incinerating flame, enveloping the tyrant completely. It was the same way Jin had been annihilated in the first test. Those flames were a powerful trap. When the flames subsided, however, the tyrant still stood.
You are a fool if you think that...
Jin hurled a knife. It pierced the tyrant right in the center of the chest, through his armor. The tyrant lifted a hand to the knife, mumbling in disbelief.
How? I've picked up a few tricks, too.
Jin's second knife lodged in the tyrant's skull, just below the crown. The tyrant fell to a knee, his greatsword slipping from his fingers.
Finish it, then.
I raised a hand for Jin to wait, then walked closer to our injured enemy.
One thing first.
The tyrant turned his masked face toward me, but remained silent. This is for breaking my favorite nose. I grabbed the crown off his head, then slammed the pommel of my sword into the knife that was already embedded in his forehead. His head snapped back, and he crumpled to the ground. I kicked him one more time for good measure, then sheathed my sword. I sat the crown on my head, then turned to Jin.
So, you want the greatsword?
A little gaudy for my tastes, but it might be useful.
He stepped over and picked up the huge weapon.
Surprisingly light. Shall I try it on the box, sire?
I shook my now magnificently adorned head.
Nay, good Sir Jin. Perhaps I should take a look at the runes, now that I am a bit better versed with them.
I inspected the box. After deciphering the runes, I came to a sad conclusion. It would appear that my time as a monarch has come to a swift end. I took off the crown, rotated it, and found a rune on the back. I pressed the rune to a matching one on the box. The crown vanished, and the box clicked open.
Tragic, Jin muttered, completely deadpan.
Inside the box, I found another key. This one colored red. This is probably for the flame room. Jin retrieved his knives from the tyrant's corpse.
Shall I fetch Sara then?
I nodded. Jin rang the return bell and vanished. Before Sara appeared, I heard a crashing noise coming from the direction of the tyrant's room, followed by a roar loud enough that it caused me to tremble. I took a defensive stance, looking in that room's direction, but there was no monster in evidence. Just the room. And one wall in the back that was glowing under my attuned sight. A false wall. I'd remembered that it existed, but I hadn't planned to make it a priority to investigate unless we couldn't find the solutions within the tyrant's room. With the tyrant beaten, it had seemed irrelevant, except when Sara appeared, I turned to her immediately.
Exactly how tough was that dragon?
Why?
She glanced around.
And is that a dead tyrant? I thought you weren't going to fight him.
I liked his hat.
Corin.
Sara folded her arms. I chuckled. He was already in the room as soon as we opened it this time. And from that and other clues, the sound of a roar interrupted me, almost as if on cue. I continued. I think the dragon is awake.
Sara clenched her hands into fists.
Too tough to beat outright, I think. Marissa and Patrick are stronger now, but...
That was all I needed to hear.
Then let's go help them.
She picked up the return bell from the floor, but I shook my head.
Not like that.
Got enough mana to make us levitate?
Sara nodded, then pointed at our feet.
Float!
I felt a slight pressure beneath my feet, but that was it. When I glanced down, though, sure enough, I was no longer touching the floor.
Huh. Okay, let's hurry.
Where?
I tucked the red key away in my pouch.
There.
I pointed at the tyrant's room.
Follow me.
I ran. Sara followed. Just as we expected, the vines didn't respond when we entered the room. They weren't activated if we never touched the floor.
Oh, the false wall. You think it leads?
I nodded. Ready?
Go.
I tapped the glowing wall with my sword. It vanished. In front of us was a tremendous chamber, probably 100 feet wide and long, and at least 30 feet tall. In the center, atop a pile of treasure, was a dragon. It was the first dragon I had ever seen. Dragons were broadly believed to be mythical offshoots of more conventional serpents like Seiryu and Mizuchi. Rather than having snake-like bodies, dragons were built more like gigantic lions with scales instead of fur. Both dragons and serpents were usually winged, although some serpents were wingless and capable of flight through other means. This dragon had bright red scales, indicating a strong association with fire. More importantly, it was awake, aware, and angry. As I watched, it took a breath and exhaled a wave of flame that enveloped nearly a quarter of the room. The next thing I saw was Marissa flying upward above the fire, then soaring downward with a gleaming fist.
Star descends from sky!
Then she punched the dragon in the face. The dragon staggered back at the impact of her fist. That was an image I would not soon forget. Marissa landed, launching a series of punches and kicks against the creature's neck without pause. Then she jumped aside to avoid a swipe from one of the dragon's claws. A blast of lightning struck the dragon on its side, and it hissed and turned its head toward a new target, Patrick. At that point, I was done waiting.
Sara?
I turned my head to her. She was already forming a globe of ice in her hands. She replied in a still scratchy voice,
Let's give it a try.
We had hoped to avoid fighting the dragon, but we'd always known it was a possibility. Hitting it with small attacks was never going to work, especially since we were short on attacks with its weakness, ice. So we'd formulated a way of hurting it a little more reliably. I drew my sword and presented the blade to her. Sarah whispered as she moved her hands closer to the sword.
Child of the goddess, I call upon your aid. Summon all your power and breathe ice upon this blade.
She plunged the globe of ice forward and it spread, enveloping the blade. I nodded in thanks as Sarah slumped, holding her throat. That had taken a lot out of her. As I turned back to the dragon, it was breathing fire again. Patrick was, impossibly enough, deflecting it with fire of his own. Like deflects like, Teft's words echoed in my mind. But Patrick was falling back, and he was clearly struggling. He couldn't defend himself for much longer. Marissa landed on the creature's back and slammed her fist into it again, but it just shook her off. I activated the ring of jumping and blasted myself forward, landing in a pile of gold. Marissa, struggling to stand, caught sight of me.
Corin?
I nodded to her.
Secret door! Help me flank this thing! Got it!
She replied in a determined tone. We rushed the dragon from opposite sides. The dragon ceased breathing fire for a moment, turning toward Marissa. I stabbed it with my frost-covered sword. The blade sunk into the hilt. The dragon howled, whipping its tail toward me with surprising speed. Instinctively, I activated the ring of jumping, taking me over the tail and safely out of the way. Unfortunately, I'd left the sword embedded in its side. The dragon turned and swiped at me with a claw before I even had a chance to land, but a blast of lightning hit it in the eye. The claw still connected, but it was a glancing blow. Even then, it was enough to knock me out of the sky. Fortunately, between the levitation spell and the ring's own effect, I just bounced harmlessly in the air before I slammed into the ground. I could see cracks in my first barrier from the dragon's claw impacting against it, but that was nothing to worry about. The dragon, turning toward me and opening its mouth, was a far bigger concern. I could see a spear of flame forming between its open jaws. Then Marissa was in front of me, waving her hands in a circular motion. The flames blasted over us, but a circular barrier appeared in front of Marissa, blocking the flames. It cracked more and more with every passing moment, but each second, Patrick was blasting the dragon from the side with more lightning. It eventually turned its gaze away, and Marissa slumped to the ground, shuddering from the effort.
Thanks,
I managed to mumble, pushing myself to my feet.
Up to you for a bit,
she stumbled backward, and I caught her.
Got it. You rest.
Marissa nodded and steadied herself as I rushed forward. The dragon was turning toward Patrick again, but that didn't mean it was safe to approach. It was thrashing wildly now, its tail threatening to crush me as I ducked under it and avoided a rear claw. I tried to grab for the sword embedded in its side, but it just smacked me aside with a claw moving too fast for me to avoid. I tumbled down the gold pile, my shield cracking further. The dragon breathed again in Patrick's direction. I doubted he could deflect much more. He'd already looked exhausted. Without the sword, I didn't have a good weapon to fight with. But I did have tools. I grabbed the magnetic cane from my bag, angled it carefully, and then activated a different rune from last time. Hundreds of pounds of coins, weapons, and other bits of metal were propelled forward, slamming into the dragon's side. The dragon teetered, its head turning upward, the flames harmlessly enveloping the ceiling. Then it was looking at me again. I turned off the rod and ran. The smashing sounds behind me were a good indication that I was being followed. I heard a whirr. On instinct, I activated the ring of jumping just in time to blast myself out of the path of a swipe from the creature's tail. Unfortunately, I aimed it poorly and I ended up falling forward. I hit the ground hard this time, indicating that Sarah's levitation spell had finally expired. When I managed to flip myself over, I found my cane was missing, having slipped out of my grasp. The dragon loomed over me, fangs bared to strike. Marissa ripped the frozen sword out of its side. The dragon howled straight into the air, swinging its tail and slamming it straight into Marissa. She flew backward, bouncing as she landed. Her phoenix sigil's barrier cracked, then shattered entirely. She still has one more barrier, I assured myself. But it won't last long. And if we keep fighting this thing, neither will we. Apparently I wasn't the only one with that impression.
Run!
Patrick shouted. That was not a very helpful suggestion, given our precarious position, but he did add a bit right after.
Sarah found the key!
That was good news, at least. The dragon was moving toward Marissa, and she was still on the ground. Unmoving, as far as I could tell. No sword. No magnetic cane. I glanced from side to side, but I couldn't see it. There was just too much junk in the pile. No choice, then. One. I picked myself up, beginning to charge transference mana in my right hand. That was when Patrick jumped on the dragon's back, his entire body shrouded with lightning.
Go!
He shouted. The dragon writhed in agony, trying to shake Patrick free. In a moment, I understood why. He was inside the dragon's shroud. His lightning attacks hadn't been able to hurt it much from a distance, but up close, I ran toward the dragon at first, still charging my fist. Two. Then I saw Marissa, still down for the count, and I prioritized. I let the mana leave my hand, turned, and rushed to Marissa's side. She was moving, but only barely. A trail of blood was running down her forehead. She must have impacted the ground even harder than I realized. Without hesitating, I ducked down and scooped her up from the ground. We're leaving. She was just aware enough to wrap her arms around me, making her easier to lift. She dropped my sword, but at the moment, that wasn't a priority. I blasted us forward three times in rapid succession. Given that she probably had a head injury, that might not have been good for her, but I judged that it was better than being splattered by a dragon. We landed not far from the entrance to the tyrant's room. Sarah was already running across that room, apparently having levitated herself again. I spared one last look back at Patrick, then blasted Marissa and myself halfway into the tyrant's room. The plants on the side of the room twitched. I tried to activate the ring of jumping again, and nothing happened. Apparently it does have a limited amount of mana. Oops. The plants rushed inward. I ran. A vine was just about to grab me when Sarah cut it in half with a blade of ice, then helped pull us through the doorway into the room where I'd started. The dragon roared in the distance, but what I heard after was something far more surprising. The gentle sound of a ringing bell. A few moments later, I realized what had happened as I set Marissa down on the floor. We took a few deep breaths, then Patrick appeared in the room next to us.
That was fun! Anyone need a break?
Marissa raised a hand.
I think I hurt something.
Sarah passed her the return bell that Jin had used.
Go take a rest, Mara. We'll take care of things from here.
Okay.
Marissa grabbed the bell and rang it, vanishing immediately. Marissa sounded like she was pretty badly shaken. I hoped that whoever was monitoring the exam would take a look at her head wound now that she was out of the testing area for a while. We had a more urgent problem to deal with, though. The dragon had lost its target, and now I could hear its footfalls heading our way. I picked up the fallen bell, just in case we'd need it later.
Can we close this door?
Patrick pointed to the entrance of the tyrant's room.
Not sure how to force it shut.
I looked at the opposite side of the tyrant's room, where the false wall had been dispelled.
I don't think it can fit through there, though. We should be...
A claw smashed away a huge chunk of the wall, making the gap wider.
Moving as quickly as possible,
I pointed at the flame statue room.
On it!
Sarah headed toward the room, inspecting it from an angle.
I don't know if I have enough mana to block all of those.
Get what you can,
she nodded.
Wall! Wall! Wall!
She pointed, and ice walls appeared, blocking jets of flame. Jin appeared in the room a moment later, glancing around.
You have acquired a Patrick.
Hey, Jin!
Patrick waved enthusiastically. Jin just gave him a curt nod.
And there's... That's a dragon, isn't it?
Yeah. We're leaving now,
I pointed at the flame statue room. Wanna lead the way?
If I must.
We headed into the chamber. Sarah had managed to block almost all of the statues. Unfortunately, her ice walls were melting pretty fast, and I doubted she had enough mana to renew them. I pulled the red key out of my bag.
Remember, the statues can turn. Be careful.
The two remaining statues were breathing flames across the room in a predictable sequence. At least, predictable until they deliberately changed it when we tried to cross. Fortunately, we were ready for that. Patrick waved his right hand and deflected the jets of flame out of the way, then stumbled. Jin caught him and dragged him forward.
Thanks. Keep moving.
In spite of Patrick's perpetual cheer, I could tell he didn't have a lot of mana left himself. Blocking fire from both the dragon and the statues had taxed him close to his limit. We reached the other side of the room. I turned the red key in the door. Nothing happened.
You have to be kidding me,
Jin pointed.
There's a key over there, behind one of the statues.
I shook my head. I got the key from this room before and tried it. It didn't work.
I will retrieve it while you try other options.
Jin moved forward, dancing between blasts of flame to head toward the key. I winced, remembering the first time he'd been blasted with the flames, but he was lighter on his feet this time. And he had his full sunstone shroud to protect him if he did get hit. I withdrew the red key from the door. Before I had a moment to consider other options, Sarah had slipped by me, and she was turning another key in the lock. One with a dragon's head. The door clicked open.
Oh, nice!
Ahead of us was a room with a familiar sight. A single central fountain filled with shimmering blue liquid. Those of us in the doorway slipped inside, and Jin followed us a moment later with the key from the previous chamber. He'd managed to retrieve it without a scratch. I scanned the room carefully with my attunement active, but I saw no signs of magic in the room, aside from the fountain and a single door on the other side.
I don't see any traps. It's probably safe in here.
We approached the fountain, but I waved a hand to halt.
That looks like a mana fountain, but let's be careful here.
I grabbed a coin out of my bag and flipped it into the water. It didn't sizzle on contact. So, probably not acid at least.
Jin, can you-
He walked over to the water and knelt down, then tentatively reached a hand over to touch it.
It's mana water.
We all breathed a sigh of relief. I also briefly wondered how the examiners had access to a fountain just like the ones in the spire, and if I could figure out a way to make one of my own. Mana water wasn't nearly as potent as a mana restoration potion, but it was still incredibly useful. Everyone took a minute just to rest and drink from the pool.
Should we go back and fight the dragon?
Patrick asked. I shook my head.
Don't think we can beat it.
Agreed,
Sarah added.
Never fight dragons,
Jin said, without any further explanation. I agreed, of course, but he sounded almost like he had experience at it. One more mystery.
Okay, that, I pointed at the door, is almost certainly going to be a floor guardian room.
Oh, right! They're usually next to mana fountains like this, right?
Patrick sounded excited, and I couldn't blame him. He hadn't actually gone on the spire expedition with the rest of us. He hadn't nearly been impaled by the limbs of a giant spider while running from an emerald-level soul blade. Sarah, Jin, and I all looked a little more... cautious.
Plan?
Jin asked. We had discussed all the rooms we'd already seen, as well as made some other more general plans, but we hadn't discussed a scenario quite like this.
I think we should run for the stairway if there is one. Even with the mana water, we're in bad shape.
I took another drink, considering.
Let me recharge everyone's phoenix sigils before we go.
The sound of a gong echoed in the distance. Or maybe not, because I think that means we're running out of time.
How bad of shape are you in?
I'm intact,
Jin offered helpfully.
I'm unhurt. You all took the dragon's attention,
Sarah added.
Not great, honestly, Patrick admitted. Phoenix sigil is out. Other sigil is bad.
I'll recharge it for just a second, then.
I walked over and grabbed onto Patrick's sigil, flooding mana into it. It would take minutes to recharge completely, but I could recharge it a little bit in just a few moments. It would be better than nothing.
We need a plan for if there is no stairway, or if it is inaccessible,
Jin pointed out. Sarah pulled her dueling cane off her belt and handed it to me.
We hit whatever is in there with everything we've got. It can't be worse than a dragon.
I accepted the cane and nodded to Sarah in thanks.
True.
Okay, we ready? Everyone acknowledged their readiness. Jin looked a little more skeptical, and I understood why.
Let's go open the door first.
Maybe we can take a look before the fight actually starts and formulate a strategy from there. Jin looked noticeably better after I said that.
Agreed.
We walked over to the door. There were three keyholes. As far as I knew, we only had two keys left, the red one from the box and the one Jin had just retrieved. Fortunately, Sarah pulled out a third. I raised an eyebrow.
Where'd you get that? That series of pillars that led to nowhere above the water in the room I started in. Turns out you were right. There was an invisible platform over there with an invisible key on it.
Nice. We inserted the three keys. The door slid open. Inside was a plain, circular room, almost like what I'd expected from a fighting arena. There was no visible stairway within. Instead, on the opposite side, was Professor Meltlake. Patrick said what we were all probably thinking.
Guys? That might be worse than the dragon. Hello, students.
A blazing aura enveloped the professor's body. Welcome to your final exam. Chapter 14. These tests are never fair. Somehow, in spite of having actually fought one of my professors inside the spire, it hadn't occurred to me that one might show up in the fake spire test. Teachers weren't exactly typical spire monsters. Then again, the professors at this school did seem to have a bizarre fixation on beating up their students in general, so I probably shouldn't have been surprised. We paused in the doorway, hesitant. This was a bad situation for a number of reasons. Professor Meltlake was renowned for her fire magic. Her surname was a title she'd earned by literally evaporating an entire lake. The best way to counter that was ice magic, but even if Sarah was at her best, she wouldn't have been strong enough to do much against someone of Meltlake's level, and Sarah was still far from recovered. This was going to be messy. Sarah stepped forward.
Professor, is that actually you over there, or a simulacrum? I need to know if we should be using lethal force.
An excellent question, dear. I am a copy, but even if I wasn't, I'd invite you to do everything in your power against me. A group of first years isn't that much of a threat.
That helped to resolve any concerns about killing Meltlake by accident, at least.
And I assume we have to beat you to conclude the test? Patrick asked.
Correct, Patrick. Unlike the rest of this exam, there are no hidden tricks here. You can think of me as a floor guardian.
That was unfortunate. If there was a hidden trick, we'd have had decent odds of finding it with this group.
Also, Patrick, Meltlake continued, no using the high-ranked spells I've been teaching you. You're not ready to use them in an actual fight yet.
Aww, he frowned.
If you say so.
Professor Meltlake clapped her hands, causing her fiery aura to swell out for a moment before collapsing back around her.
Well, if you students are done with the questions, shall we begin?
Sarah whispered.
Jin, Corin, go right. Patrick with me. Go.
Jin and I rushed forward, then veered right. Jin drew a pistol and opened fire while on the run. His bullets disappeared into Meltlake's aura, and I saw no sign that any of them connected. Sarah and Patrick ran the opposite direction, and Meltlake turned to follow them. Apparently, she saw them as the threat, and she was probably right. Meltlake threw a sphere of fire in their direction, which Patrick blasted with a jet of his own flame, knocking it back toward Meltlake. It exploded partway, and I felt a wave of heat wash over the entire room. Sarah followed up by hurling a shard of ice. Meltlake didn't even move. The ice shard hit her aura and melted on contact. Jin and I were safely behind Meltlake now, and I fired a few blasts from my dueling cane at her back. The spheres of mana hit her aura, crackled, and vanished without a trace. Meltlake threw a blast of lightning, which forked into two. Patrick's aura shifted into a crackling field of electricity, causing the lightning aimed at him to rebound off harmlessly, but Sarah took a hit. Cracks spread across her shield. Sarah folded her hands and whispered,
Child of the Goddess, I call upon your aid.
Meltlake slammed her cane into the floor and the whole room shook. Sarah fell back, losing her concentration on her spell. I didn't have my sword or gauntlet, so I just kept firing the dueling cane at Meltlake. It was ineffective at hurting her, but I had to hope it would work as a distraction. Jin fired another bullet into her aura, but again, nothing happened.
This is ridiculous. We can't even hurt her. Unless...
Jin, can you do what you did to the tyrant? His jaw tightened.
Just tried. The bullets are melting too fast.
Resh. Should I ring the bell and get Marissa? I shook my head, dismissing the idea. No, she'd have to run all the way across the fire room to get to us, and she's still probably injured. I can't lean on her to handle this for me. Shrouds are less effective at close range. If I had my sword, I could reach that far, but the dueling cane is too short. I'd seen that problem solved before. Karras could form blades out of his mana, and Marissa had learned to shape her shroud in a similar way. I still couldn't do that. My shroud stubbornly refused to move into a blade shape in spite of numerous attempts. But I did have another idea, based on something else I'd seen Karras do, and one of my own older techniques. I pressed a rune on the dueling cane, bringing out the blade. Then I pressed my hand against the metal and concentrated. This was going to take a minute. While I focused, Meltlake was beginning to attack with greater ferocity. She threw another sphere of fire, but when Patrick blasted it like before, it split apart into three smaller spheres instead of rebounding. Those smaller spheres flew apart, then righted themselves and continued flying at Patrick and Sarah. Sarah countered one of them with a burst of arctic wind, causing it to detonate prematurely. The explosion knocked her back, but she didn't look hurt. Patrick's aura shifted from lightning to fire. It wasn't as intense as Meltlake's aura, but it still was bright enough that it was hard to look at. The other two spheres hit him dead on, exploding against his shroud, but his own flames deflected most of the damage. Most. I could see thin cracks underneath his shield. Like deflected like, but there was too much of a difference of raw power here for his fire to protect him completely. I was surprised by his next move. He charged. Meltlake threw a lance of flame at Patrick, but he sidestepped it, and the spear slammed into the wall behind him, melting a hole in the stone. When Patrick came in close, he swung a burning fist at Meltlake's face. She knocked his hand aside with her cane, then kicked him in the chest. He flew backward, a crack in his shield where she'd connected. He threw a bolt of lightning at Meltlake as he flew back, but that just vanished as it hit her aura.
Permafrost Cascade!
Sarah had finished her spell this time, whispering while Patrick had Meltlake distracted. Dozens of icy shards appeared, raining down on Meltlake. She created a wall of flame in midair, interposing it in the path of the shards. Sarah waved a hand and the shards veered off of their path, flying around the wall and slamming into Meltlake's aura. I was impressed Sarah had pulled off a spell like that. She must have gotten used to drawing mana from the rest of her body. Still, I didn't think she'd be able to keep it up for long. Jin immediately opened fire on one of the spots a shard had hit. This time, I saw a flicker of protective mana flickering beneath the shroud.
Good. That makes it more plausible this will work.
I raised my dueling cane, finished with the harder part. Making a small mana crystal was easy now. I'd made dozens of both solid crystals and hollow ones. I hadn't really experimented with other shapes, but it wasn't hard. I held the proof of that. A dueling cane with the blade extended by 2 extra feet of pure crystal. The real test was what happened when I hit the last rune, flooding the blade with mana. Just as I'd hoped, it ran right up the metal and into the crystal. It still wasn't quite as good as a real sword, but it would do. Professor Meltlake was finally turning toward my side of the room, apparently having noticed that hit from Jin. She hurled a sphere of fire in our direction. Instinctively, I tried to activate the ring of jumping, but it was still out of mana. Jin stepped in front of the sphere and shot a hole right through it. The rest of the sphere collapsed harmlessly.
Huh. Didn't know that could happen.
I took the moment of apparent safety as a chance to charge. Meltlake was raising her cane to meet my rush when Patrick threw a blast of fire at the floor at her feet. The explosion was harmless with her aura active, but the tremors caused her to stumble just a step. That bought me the time I needed to close in and strike.
The crystalline blade made it through her aura, hitting her dead on, and then snapped on contact. I saw the telltale sparks of damage to her barrier, then she waved a hand and I was engulfed in flame. My vision was nothing but fire. Both sigils and shroud were protecting me, but the heat was so intense that they couldn't ward it off entirely. I felt my skin crack and burn. A burst of cold flashed over me, then the flames were gone. I stepped back, coughing from the smoke. Sarah was coughing too, for a different reason. I could see the hints of icy mana still around her from the spell she'd used to save me from the enveloping flames. She clutched her chest, and I felt a sudden spike of worry as I realized how much she'd pushed herself. Meltlake must have noticed that too, because she threw another wave of flame directly at Sarah. Patrick tried to get in the way. He failed. The inferno washed over Sarah, and then she was gone. The crystal blade on the dueling cane was snapped too short to give the reach I needed to hit Meltlake again. I needed another plan. Patrick was forming a sphere of lightning in his hands, preparing what looked like a larger attack than I'd seen him use before. I doubted it would work, but I'd have to buy him time. I rushed to the right, trying to draw Meltlake's attention. It worked. She raised her hand to blast me again, but I was ready for it this time. Haste! The burst of speed took me out of the way of Meltlake's attack, but it also threw me off balance. I stumbled and tripped, but recovered before I actually tumbled to the floor. When I spun back around, I took a blast of lightning straight to the chest. My Phoenix Sigil's barrier shattered immediately, and I felt my shield sigil drain to almost nothing. Meltlake hit hard, and I didn't have Sarah to save me from another attack. Fortunately, as usual, we'd all forgotten about Jin. He stood behind her, dagger in hand, and stabbed straight at her neck. Meltlake sidestepped the attack effortlessly, turned, and enveloped Jin in a blast of fire. Addendum. Everyone other than Meltlake had forgotten about Jin. He staggered, raising his arms to protect himself, but she continued the blast. I hurled my dueling cane at Meltlake's back. The attack connected, but she barely reacted. The cane melted to slag a moment later. And a moment after that, Jin was gone. Patrick let out a growl, finally hurling the huge sphere of lightning he'd been forming between his hands. Meltlake just shook her head and batted it aside effortlessly. "What did I tell you about investing all your mana in one attack?"
"Don't do it," Patrick shook his head. "But you also taught me the value of surprises."
The sphere split apart, just like Meltlake's had. Then, rather than flying toward her, the spheres each fired a blast of electrical energy from a different angle. She knocked one of the blasts aside, but the other two hit her in the chest. I saw her convulse for a moment on impact, indicating that he'd done some real damage. The spheres kept firing, while Patrick sagged from exhaustion. I began to charge transference mana in my right hand. It was the last attack option I could think of, unless I wanted to run back to another room to try to get my sword. One. Meltlake waved her cane and chunks of stone shot out of the floor, enveloping the lightning spheres. With the threat of the lightning attacks gone, she turned to Patrick. "Your control is improving. You couldn't have managed that a few weeks ago."
"Thank you, ma'am."
Two. She shook her head. "It was still a poor choice.
You could have done more damage if you'd managed to extinguish my shroud, if only for a moment."
He shrugged.
"I thought a distraction was a better choice."
Meltlake glanced around.
"For what? Corrin is unarmed, and your friends are all gone."
Three. Something slammed into her face a moment later, snapping her neck back. She staggered, then raised a hand to a bloody lip, wearing an expression of disbelief. She hadn't forgotten Jin, like the rest of us had. But she had underestimated him. I hadn't. The moment Jin had vanished, I knew there were two possibilities. Maybe he'd been taken out of the match like Sarah had, but he was a sunstone with a stronger shroud than any of ours. More likely, he'd gone invisible, using the item I'd given him earlier in the year. And I had a pretty good idea of his dramatic timing by now. Not quite perfect. I'd only been charging my mana for 3 seconds, rather than the 5 I needed for full strength. But it was close enough. I lunged forward and punched Meltlake in the face.
She flew backward from the impact, and I felt a hardened barrier cracking against my fist. Unfortunately, I also felt her aura of fire burn me as I closed in, and that ate up the last of my shield. A moment later, Meltlake was standing again, and she pointed at me. All I saw was a single line of light appear from the tip of her finger aimed right at the center of my chest. Then there was a flash of pain, and my vision went white. When I reappeared in the waiting room, Sarah was the only one in there. No second-year student to watch over us, and more importantly, no Marissa. I briefly considered just running back into the testing room, but it was pretty clear that I'd be breaking the rules that way. And not in a fun, Corn always breaks the rules as much as he can while getting away with it sort of way. I turned to Sarah instead. You okay? She nodded.
Tired.
She coughed, clutching her throat for a second, wincing.
Can't talk much. Fill me in.
By the time I'd let her know what I missed, Patrick had appeared.
Aww, he folded his arms. Almost thought we had her for a minute.
I shrugged. Jin still might. Jin appeared a moment later.
Or not.
She stopped holding back quite as much once we hurt her, Patrick explained. The attacks she was using at first were just basic stuff like quartz and carnelian level. I think we made her mad.
Good. That indicates a degree of success,
Jin replied. I agree. I looked around. Anyone seen Mara? It was 5 full minutes before a battered Marissa appeared in the room, smoke still rising off her torn and burned clothing. She had some sort of weird, unfamiliar crystal in her right hand.
Man, she mumbled. That dragon was tough.
There was an awkward pause. Patrick visibly stared at the gem, then Marissa, then back to the gem. After a couple minutes of explanation, we found that Marissa had rested for a bit, then run back into the test room once Sarah had come out, much like what I'd done in the first exam. Sarah had directed her to the room with Meltlake, but unfortunately there was a dragon in the way. Marissa had then solved the dragon problem. Unfortunately, that left her too weak to do much of anything else, and Professor Meltlake had come up behind her and finished the job. The professor showed up in our chamber a minute or so after that. She was clearly uninjured, so it was probably the real version this time.
Congratulations! You have successfully passed your final exam for magic theory class.
We let out a holler of victory. Even Jin looked pleased. Sarah broke into coughing again afterward, and I gave her a look of concern. Professor Meltlake kept talking, though.
You're one of few teams to reach the floor guardian room at all this year, and one of fewer to actually harm my simulacrum.
How close did we get to beating her? Patrick asked.
Meltlake laughed. Don't think a busted lip is going to get you anywhere close to taking me down, Patrick. My simulacrum still had about 90% of her mana, and about 80% of her barrier left. That is not an insult to your performance by any stretch, however. As first-year students, you were not expected to be able to hurt her at all. I nodded at that. The simulacrum was probably at least a citrine-level monster, and aside from Jin, none of us were anywhere close to that. It definitely reinforced the knowledge that Derek had been seriously holding back when he'd fought us in Aspire. That simulacrum alone was more than enough to beat all of us, and the real Meltlake was probably considerably stronger. A glance showed her aura as citrine, but I suspected she was hiding an emerald aura, just like Derek had.
Given the difficulty of reaching the end of the dungeon as well as your performance in the fight, I am pleased to give you all a rank of A for your final exam. Congratulations.
We let out another cheer, except for Sarah, who wisely kept her enthusiasm subdued.
Now that we've completed the test, can we ask you some questions about it? I asked.
Of course. But keep in mind that you still may not speak to any other teams about the test. Some people haven't finished it yet.
Great. Now, let's start with the dark room.
We spent the next hour grilling her with questions about how certain puzzles were meant to be solved. I was surprised to find that everyone seemed just as interested in knowing the other solutions as I was. Even Jin had a question or two. After that hour, Professor Meltlake smiled and waved. I'm going to have to go. I have another test to run. If you have any further questions, you can ask me at my office at a later time. I nodded. Just one last one. Did anyone do better than we did? Not many, she admitted. But one first-year team actually managed to beat my simulacrum. I blinked at that. How? That's confidential for now, I'm afraid. But I can tell you after the end of the year, if you're interested. Very interested. I wanted to learn every trick I could for future tests and trips to the Spire. I wasn't surprised that someone had managed to outperform us a little. There were hundreds of teams, after all. But beating the simulacrum? I had to know who could fight like that. I definitely look forward to finding out.
Hold on, everyone.
Sarah stopped us outside the building as we were about to split up.
Even you, Jin.
Sarah's voice was scratchier than usual, almost as bad as it had been right after her first surgery. Jin was already ahead of us, but he still turned around and returned to the group. He shoved his hands in his pockets, giving Sarah a look of mild irritation. The rest of us just turned toward Sarah since we were already walking together. Sarah was still having trouble talking, but at least she wasn't coughing.
I wanted to say that everyone did a great job in there, and we couldn't have succeeded without everyone's cooperation.
We gave her a series of nods.
Wish they would have let me use this. We might have done even better.
Patrick patted the sword that he'd fastened back on his hip. They'd forced us to hand over his Dawnbringer replica before we'd even entered the exam. It was a little irritating, but given what had happened with Celice Leanne, I didn't blame them for being cautious with our magical weapons. I was lucky they'd even let me bring in the transference sword.
You still did just fine without it.
Sarah gave him a friendly nudge.
Anyway, I had a couple more things to say. First, I would like to ask you all to consider being on my team again next year, provided we all graduate, which I'm sure we will, and that we have similar tests next year.
Amen. Marissa replied at once.
Couldn't hope for a better team.
Patrick gave a cheer.
Yeah, we'll do even better next time.
I smiled. I'll be here, obviously. Jin winced as all eyes turned to him.
I'll think on it.
Sarah's eyes narrowed.
Good. I would like to include you, Jin, but there is one more thing.
Jin tilted his head downward.
Say it.
She nodded.
You clearly already know where this is going, but I'll say it regardless. If you ever hurt one of my friends again, I will personally feed you to Seiryu.
He gave her one of his signature half-nods.
Understood. If that's all.
Sarah's jaw tightened, just a hint.
That will be all.
Jin spun on his heel and walked away. Patrick's expression sank.
Was that really necessary, Sarah?
Honestly, I thought she was being too generous, if anything. I wanted to trust Jin again. Working with him again had been fun. We did make a good team. But it was going to take more than just not killing anyone during one test to regain my trust.
You weren't there,
Sarah snapped, tightening her hands into fists.
You don't get to complain.
Patrick winced and took a step back. Marissa stepped in between them.
Hey now, Sarah, don't bite off your hand just because it itches.
I hadn't heard that expression, but it seemed pretty appropriate. Sarah tensed again, then said,
Fine. You're right. I'm sorry, Patrick. I'm just... He nearly killed someone. He could have gotten us all killed. You and Corrin might be the forgiving sort, but I'm not going to just pretend we're all friends again like nothing happened.
I'm not sure I can forgive him either. I folded my arms. But let's not have this argument. If we need to discuss how we're going to handle Jin at some point, that's fine. This isn't the place or the time. We're in public, and we can't let all this slip out. Sarah shook her head.
I said what I needed to say for now. Just know that I'll be keeping my eyes on him. I know the reasons he gave you in this Spire, but I still don't think we know a fraction of what he's really up to.
All right, if that's done then, why don't we get some eats?
Marissa snagged Sarah by the arm.
Nothing like punching a dragon to get my stomach rumbling.
Patrick laughed.
You'd probably eat the dragon if it was real.
What, wouldn't you? Bet it gave me magic powers or something. Wasn't there a story like that?
They say that's how the Blackstone Bandit got so strong. Come on,
I'll tell you about it on the way to the dining hall.
Mara frowned.
Don't you mean the Blackstone assassin? Nah, totally different. This guy is real. Just saw him in the papers recently. Robbed a casino blind just a few weeks ago.
Patrick continued to regale us with dubious tales of the Blackstone bandit's exploits all the way to the dining hall, and through much of lunch, too. Later in that evening, I overheard Sarah having a conversation with Karis back at Derek's manor.
Sounds too dangerous, especially in your condition.
That was Karis's voice.
Might be just the thing I need to get my edge back, though. You sure you don't want to try?
Definitely not yet.
I'm sorry. The risks are too high. We can talk about it when you hit Sunstone or Citrine.
Bah!
I found the two of them inside Derek's training room, which we virtually never used since the rooftop had turned into our de facto location for sparring. Still, the training room had its uses, most notably to training dummies that had powerful magical shields. The walls were, of course, also shielded. I waved when I walked in. What was that all about?
We were, just talking about Sarah's.
Sarah's voice sounded pretty rough again, and that worried me, but I didn't say anything. I didn't want to come across as nagging. In the back of my mind, though, I was making plans for heading to Van Reach Peak at some point in the future. Sheridan's treatment had helped, but it clearly hadn't solved the problem entirely. Sarah raised a crystalline sword. From her stumbling over her words and Karis's dubious expression, I could tell that the sword was definitely not what they had been talking about. I decided not to push, both because she was clearly uncomfortable and because Sarah's was an interesting topic in itself. She'd had it for several weeks now, but I hadn't seen her experiment with it much yet, presumably because she didn't have enough mana to make it work. Either that, or she'd just been training in private. Sarah's was a legendary weapon, the personal sword of Katashi himself. Unlike the six sacred swords, it wasn't forged for mortal use. Rather, it was an instrument wielded by the Visage himself, supposedly for his battles against the children of the Tyrant. They were the only living beings, aside from the Tyrant himself and the God Beasts, that were thought to rival the Visages in power. If what Karis had told me earlier was true, some of those children might even be more powerful than an individual Visage, which explained why even a Visage might need a powerful weapon. There were other legendary beings that might have been similarly dangerous, the old gods that had supposedly died, and monsters and servants they'd left behind. But as far as I knew, none of those were on this continent. They'd be back in the old lands that our people had left behind during the great exodus to Caldwin hundreds of years ago. Because Sarah's was used by a Visage, however, legends about it were varied. Some of them were clearly nonsense, like that Sarah's was forged from the heart of another world that had died long ago. Others were a little more plausible. Some said that it had once been used by one of the ancient gods who had died in battle against the Tyrant. In terms of the sword's actual capabilities, I knew even less. I waved a hand at Sarah's. I've heard the stories about it, of course, but how's it actually work?
We've been trying to figure that out.
Sarah snapped back to her normal demeanor, tilting the sword sideways. The weapon's entire blade was made out of some sort of blue crystal. There were no visible runes on the surface, but I could see some kind of mana swirling around inside the crystal, even without my attunement active. What have you learned so far? Sarah turned toward one of the combat dummies.
Here, watch.
She slashed the dummy, and I saw a flicker of energy as it impacted against a shield. Nothing else happened. I folded my arms.
So it can be used to hit things. That's very impressive, Sarah. Truly, it is a blade without equal.
Sarah turned back my way and rolled her eyes. Sighing, she said,
Pay a little more attention, will you? Here, I'll make it easier. Karis, if you would.
Karis held up a hand, conjuring a ball of fire and hurling it at Sarah before I could react. I had a moment of fear and alarm before Sarah raised Sarah's to intercept the blast. What happened next was peculiar. She didn't cleave the fireball in half like I might have expected Karis to. Instead, the sword flashed for an instant,
and then the ball of fire distorted, seeming to stretch out toward the blade. When the flames reached the crystalline surface, they vanished entirely. A moment later, the inside of the crystal was swirling with crimson mana. As I processed what had just happened, she turned and swung the sword at the dummy.